This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Trump federalized D.C. Let's talk about why that was necessary. Are government people finally going to go to prison? The director of the NIH is here. What a show for you tonight on Amran. Well, let's get the big news out of the way first, shall we? Everybody's talking about it right now. Why did Trump get up today, have this big press conference? Pam Bondi's there, Pete Hegseth behind him. All the big shots in the room. He got up and said this.
I'm announcing a historic action to rescue our nation's capital from crime, bloodshed, bedlam, and squalor, and worse. This is Liberation Day in D.C., and we're going to take our capital back. We're taking it back under the authorities vested in me as the President of the United States. I'm officially invoking Section 740 of the District of Columbia Home Rule Act. You know what that is? And placing the D.C. Metropolitan Police Department under direct federal control, and you'll be meeting the people that will be directly involved with that. Very good people, but they're tough. And they know what's happening. They've done it before. In addition, I'm deploying the National Guard to help reestablish law, order, and public safety in Washington, D.C., and they're going to be allowed to do their job properly.
Right? Why? We'll get to the communist motivations for it and why they're upset, but one of the big reasons why is, well, I'll tell you what, pause on that. Remember when we talked about job interviews before? You and me. I've given you advice on job interviews, and one of the main things, maybe the main thing, show up looking nice, dressed up. It doesn't mean you have to have a $1,000 suit on, but whatever your best clothes are, dress up. No cut-off shorts. No one wants to see your tattoos. Put on some decent clothes and show up for your job interview. Why? First impressions matter a lot. Appearance matters a lot. Did you know? Here's a little historical tidbit you may not know. Have you ever been to D.C.? Even if you haven't, I know you've seen pictures of it. You know what parts of it look like. Pretty fancy, right? All that white marble, pillars, and these monuments here. Did you know that was done intentionally by the founders of this country? Why? These were small government people. They didn't want D.C. to be super powerful or anything like that. They didn't want a kingdom. Why did they intentionally create something that looked so good? Because they understood foreign dignitaries would visit the United States of America. They would visit our nation's capital. And what they saw when they got there matters. How you dress when you show up for a job interview, for a first date. It does matter, and anyone who tells you it doesn't is a moron. It matters that Washington, D.C., the capital of our nation, is a dump, a dangerous dump. Murders through the roof, higher crime rate than Mexico freaking City, carjackings, break-ins. It is a total dump. I won't even take my family there now. And look, Trump, who's about, I think Friday, he's going into negotiations with Vladimir Putin. He brought up this exact thing.
And it's embarrassing for me to be up here. You know, I'm going to see Putin. I'm going to Russia on Friday. I don't like being up here talking about how unsafe and how dirty and disgusting this once beautiful capital was.
Impressions matter. I'll tell you something. You know, I want to go to Turkey one day. Stay with me. You know why I want to go to Turkey? Because coming back, I was just flying through, we had a layover in Istanbul, both ways. A layover in Istanbul. The airport was unbelievable. It was huge. It was nice. Great food. All the employees were dressed to the nines. Very pleasant. And that impression of Istanbul, of Turkey, made me want to go back and visit one day. Impressions matter. It matters that Washington, D.C., and let me expand this a little bit more. It matters that America's cities, our biggest cities, are dumps. It matters that the murder is high, that there are homeless people everywhere, that people run amok. It does matter. And maybe you're sitting there in rural America right now, as I am, and you're saying to yourself, I don't care about the city. Screw the cities. I understand that sentiment. I grew up in Montana. I get that sentiment all the way. I don't live in New York City or Washington, D.C. I understand it. But in Japan, in Saudi Arabia, in Peru, what's on the billboards for America? New York? Washington, D.C.? Los Angeles? As much as I may love Montana, they're not putting that on the billboard. The fact that our cities are a crime-ridden, murder-filled dump is important. It does matter. And I want you to understand something else, because we're about to get into the Democrat, the communist motivations for why they're this way, but you know it's a choice, right? This is something that we don't realize, we Americans don't realize, because we've gotten used to, well, cities are full of crime. Cities are dirty. Cities are full of crime. I probably can't send your daughter there for the weekend, not without a chaperone. That's what we've gotten used to. There are cities all over the world that are sparkling clean. Go to Tokyo one day. Way more people than any city in America. You can put your wife out on the street and have her walk 10 city blocks at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night, and she'll come back to you safe and sound. There are cities all across the world that are not dirty. They're not full of crime. They're not full of murderers. American cities are, because Democrats are evil, crime-loving communists, and they've destroyed our cities. Donald Trump is stepping in to clean up murder and rape and robbery. And today, in response to this, you saw a lot of this.
One of the things that we have seen over and over from the president, from his team, you know, Stephen Miller saying it's like Baghdad and Ethiopia, they seem to hold their harshest criticism sometimes for cities that are majority black and brown.
Chris, to be honest with you, I'm trying to hold my temper. I think there's an ongoing argument that he's having in his head with Black Lives Matter. There's an ongoing argument that he's having with the questions around criminal justice reform and police reform. It's interesting that he really doesn't really care about what's actually happening in D.C. on a certain level, because he's not trying to get at the underlying root causes.
Well, the root causes. It wasn't just MSNBC. It's been Democrat after Democrat, media channel after media channel. This was CNN.
And just as we go to break, I should note that the most violent moment in recent history in D.C. was January 6th. And it was an attack on the United States Capitol by a lot of people who were doing it in the name of Donald Trump. And it included the people who were hurt, included members of law enforcement.
That's an insane person. So why are they doing that today? Telling outright ridiculous lies like that? Why the response to this? Well, this is where we dig into communism and what they want. First of all, remember something. We don't have Democrats in America anymore. We have communists. That's what they are. And once you understand that's what they are, then you can move from there and understand why they say and do what they do. In the Soviet Union, during their revolution, when the Bolsheviks were having their revolution, trying to conquer the government, trying to win, did you know they opened up the prison doors? And not just a couple, either. There were political prisoners, yes, but they said, no. Get the keys and open up the doors for everybody. Why would you do that? Those prisons were full of, like all prisons are, full of murderers and rapists and thieves. Why would you want them on the streets? But they actually took an extra step in the Soviet Union. They turned loose the murderers and the rapists and the thieves. And then, tell me if any of this sounds familiar, they put into place judges and the like, prosecutors, who would protect the murderers and rapists and thieves. One story I've told you before about a thief pulling a knife on a military veteran. The military veteran disarms him, hurts him. The military veteran was thrown in the gulag for that. The criminals are to be protected. The good people who try to stop them are to be thrown in prison. None of this sounds familiar, does it? So why is it communists do this? Why did they do this in the Soviet Union, in New York City, in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles, in city after city after city? Because, well, Think about a family, a happy, stable family. Mom, dad, kids, happy, content, stable. You want to break that family up. You want to destroy it. You're trying to have a revolution. Introduce a violent dog into the home. Go adopt some deranged pit bull or something like that. Starts biting everybody, tearing up the furniture. Is that going to in some way destabilize what was a stable home? Communists love violent criminals for the exact same reason. A stable, happy, content society will not embrace an evil communist revolution, but a society where people are afraid will. Destabilization. That is the name of the game. While the revolution is ongoing, they want destabilization. And this is why I have to step in here now and have a conversation with you. And it's not my job to police your words, but please stop using the term soft on crime. I still see so many people on the right using this term. They're soft on crime. These soft on crime DAs. It's Democrats' soft on crime policies. They're not soft on crime. They want people murdered. When the Democrat judge and the Democrat DA set the serial rapist loose from jail and he goes and rapes some 50-year-old woman, they're not sitting around saying, "Oh, dang it! I thought he turned his life around. I was just being soft on crime." They wanted her raped. They want you robbed. They want you assaulted. They want you murdered. They want your daughter raped. They're not soft on crime. They're pro-crime. They've done this. Democrats have done this to America's cities on purpose. And as long as we play this game of make-believe where it's a whoops, I spilled the milk and we did some crime, then we can never formally take on these communists in a way that will win. We have violent crime in our cities because Democrats want violent crime in the cities. They are pro-murder, pro-rape, pro-robbery. And this brings me to what Donald Trump did. He had to. He had no choice. This is where we're at now. A terrible set of circumstances. We now have to have Big Daddy government step in to stop innocent people from being murdered. I didn't want it to be this way. Trump mentioned New York. We might have to do the same thing in Chicago. And maybe he will have to if he can legally do so. And that's not what I want. I assume that's not what you want. But this is what happens when you allow the communists to take over our cities and they turn the jails loose. Eventually, somebody with a heavy hand is going to have to step in. Just please understand this. It's the most important part of this entire thing. Violent crime is what Democrats want. And it's why they're so angry that he's going to step in today and clean it up. When they look at more murders in Washington, D.C. per 100,000 people than really virtually any other city on the planet, they're not bummed about it. They're thrilled. And it's also why, as you see your liberal Aunt Peggy citing the crime stats going down, it's also why they moved to conquer every single government agency they could. What that does is it gives them the legitimacy of the lie. You see, if you want violent crime to go up in D.C., you know that's not going to be popular, so you simply put communists in place all over the police department who will lie about the violent crime, thus giving the media members and Democrats cover to say violent crime has gone down, when really we just had an article out last week where we discovered the commanders in Washington, D.C., the police commanders routinely show up on the job and talk people out, talk their officers out of reporting crime the way it is. It's all a lie because they want you murdered and raped. They just don't want you to know that's what they want. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, it's not just going to be the thugs and gangbangers arrested in D.C. According to some people, it's going to be government people. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we talk about that, let me talk to you about how bland your olive oil is. It's bland because of time. It's just how it goes. You know, it's food. Loses its flavor over time. The olive oil you buy in the grocery store is bland. You just don't know it because it's all you know. It's all I knew. Try one bottle. I'm not selling you some lifetime commitment. Try one bottle fresh from a farm and you'll be shocked at the difference. Go to farmfresh246.com. They'll send you a $39 bottle for free. You pay like a buck to cover the shipping. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back. Okay, let's talk about cleaning out the government. And it's time to hand out some credit where credit is due. You know, I don't exactly hesitate to attack the right, to attack the GOP when I see weakness and failure. And obviously, you don't have to look hard to find that in the GOP. But when they're doing good, we should be pointing that out as well. I believe that is the right thing to do. Now, let's talk about the federal government before we get to some specifics, FBI, CIA, and otherwise. As you know, the federal government was weaponized against the right in horrible ways under Obama, and then especially got put into hyperdrive under Joe Biden. How did they do that? Why did they do that? Well, they did that by filling up the government with communists. The saying is as old as time, personnel is policy. Personnel is policy. How many times have you heard that? Well, it's a fact. If you fill up the government with committed communists who hate Republicans, then you're inevitably, wherever you put those committed communists, you're going to have that organization attacking Republicans and protecting Democrats. Barack Obama worked very hard during his 8 years to put those people into place all over the government. Joe Biden got to drive the sports car that Barack Obama built and turn the federal government loose on the right in every possible way. It's probably the most evil thing I've ever seen from the government in the United States of America, and that's saying something. So we have, you know, Cash Patel, Dan Bongino taking over the FBI. Well, they may be in charge, right? But just because you're sitting in the big office, in the big suite, doesn't mean you are firmly in control of everything. When you have a multi-thousand person, something like 35,000 employees, thousands of employees underneath you with manager after manager after manager who's a commissar, it's going to take work to get them out. And unlike the private sector, sadly, you can't fire these freaking people. It takes forever. But they are getting rid of them. Brian Driscoll. Brian Driscoll is a piece of trash. Brian Driscoll's gone. Steve Jensen, he was a senior agent at the FBI, really heading up the persecution of the January Sixers. Remember how the FBI would hunt down people, pound on their doors, sending SWAT teams after peaceful people? Yeah, he's gone too. Walter Giardina, fired. You remember Peter Navarro? Peter Navarro, who came on this show several times, Peter Navarro offered, through his attorney, he lived right by the FBI, he told the FBI, if you're going to come get me, I didn't do anything wrong, but just let me know, I'll come turn myself in. The FBI said, no, we're not interested. And then they grabbed him and cuffed him in the jetway of an airport to humiliate him on top of everything else. The guy who did that's gone too. Again, we have to hand out credit where credit is due, and I realize we have a very, very long way to go, but that we are cleaning out the commissars is a good thing that we should feel good about. Give yourself some wins. Don't succumb to the cynicism, I do this all the time too, of, well, it's not enough. That's not enough. We have more to go. They should go to jail. And I'm not saying you're wrong about any of that. I agree. It's not enough. More should go to jail. More should be fired. It's not enough, but it's something. Not just the FBI. Honestly, maybe more frightening than the FBI is what has happened at the Central Intelligence Agency. When America's intelligence agency, spy agency that isn't even supposed to operate domestically, starts operating domestically on behalf of Democrats and against Republicans, it's a big deal. So when you see segments like this on MSNBC, it really should put a smile on your face.
Brian Driscoll became something of a folk hero, as you mentioned, when he was named the acting director, accidentally, by the way. His name was put in the wrong place in a chart. And then he stood up to a plan by the Trump administration that seemed like it was poised to fire hundreds, if not thousands, of FBI agents who had worked on those January 6th cases. He resisted that. And yet he retained his job, and his continued employment in the Bureau, as well as Jensen and some of these other people, provided provided a little bit of hope that it was possible to dissent from some aspect of Trump administration policy, or at least to push back and keep your job. Well, that day is over. The message has been sent very clearly. And morale inside the FBI, guys, is about as low as I've ever heard it described as I talk to people.
That's wonderful. Washington Post reporting CIA officials are leaking that Gabbard is overriding their concerns. FBI cleaning out, Gabbard cleaning it out. And by the way, I brought up the CIA. We have a long way to go there because, again, it's an organization that it's based on lies. It kind of has to be. Spies don't get to announce their presence when they're doing it, so you have a bunch of professional trained liars inside of the building. Tulsi acknowledged as much as what she said.
John Brennan and James Clapper, as leaders in the intelligence community, they have their own disciples. They have a lot of their own people that they brought in with them, or that they mentored in a mirroring of their own image. And many of those people still exist within the intelligence community now. Fundamentally, we are working towards making change, institutional change. And this is a major area of focus for me, institutional change that will undo the infrastructure that people like John Brennan and James Clapper built, that allowed these bad actors to thrive and to be promoted into very, very powerful positions within the intelligence community.
That infrastructure she's talking about, that's what we mentioned earlier from Barack Obama. They put into place a communist infrastructure system where if you proved yourself to be a loyal commissar, you would get promoted. And now we have to get the criminals out. And look, people are doubtful. Honestly, I'm doubtful that we're going to see indictments and arrests just because we've never seen them. These criminals always get away with it. But I keep getting more and more hopeful as we keep getting bigger and bigger people saying they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. It's not a small deal that the Vice President of the United States of America is saying this.
I absolutely want to see indictments, Maria. Look, of course, you've got to have the law follow the facts here. You don't just indict people to indict people. You indict people because they broke the law. But if you look at what Tulsi and Kash Patel have revealed in the last couple of weeks, I don't know how anybody can look at that and say that there wasn't aggressive violations of the law. And I absolutely think they broke the law. And you're going to see a lot of people get indicted for that.
A lot of people getting indicted. That means a lot. And it means a lot because I don't think the Vice President of the United States of America drops that hot potato in Pam Bondi's lap unless he's been given assurances that there's something there. We've had Tulsi Gabbard come out and say, it's time. Vice President, it's time. It's time. All these big shots keep saying it's time. Very clearly, they think they have something. I think they do. Put a smile on your face. All right. Let's talk to Dr. J, shall we? The NIH director. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you. I had to get a new phone. I had an older phone, and it wasn't charging. I kept picking it up and plugging it in, and it just wouldn't. It was driving me crazy. And you know how I hate technology anyway. So I had to get a hold of Pure Talk. They speak English. When you get a hold of people at Pure Talk, it's not just English. They're pleasant. They understand you. You understand them. Have a nice day, sir. It's a pleasure, sir. It's like in America we used to have again. I so appreciate a mobile company that hires Americans. It's not just that Pure Talk will save you a ton over Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T. It's that they're pleasant and they hire Americans. That means something to me. Maybe it's because their CEO is a Vietnam veteran. Make the switch. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, I'm not going to sit here, as you know, and praise COVID or the COVID response in this country. Everybody knows that's not exactly something I'm going to do. But oftentimes in life, something I've learned in my 44 years is there are good things that can come from bad things. Without COVID, this country's ridiculous response to it, I dare say we probably wouldn't have the great Dr. Jay Bhattacharya as the head of the NIH, and it blesses me to no end that that's where he sits. Dr. Jay, be honest with you, though, the digs have to be way worse than it was at Stanford. It's a lower standard of living, isn't it?
I mean, I did have to take a 60% pay cut, which was fine. And then, I miss California. But, you know, this job has its perks. There's a lot of amazing scientists, and I get to learn a lot about, sort of how they're working to make America healthy. So there's that.
Okay, tell me, by the way, speaking of making America healthy, tell me about canceling $500 million in funding for mRNA. I don't know if we're still calling them vaccines or not. What is it? What happened there? Can you explain it, please?
Sure. So we have had, ever since, you know, basically 2021, actually 2020 even, a big investment in producing mRNA technology for vaccines, mainly for the COVID vaccine. And we've kept this investment up even as the uptake of the COVID vaccine has like just declined very sharply. Like I think 60% in 2024, 60% of Americans said that adult Americans said they'd never take another mRNA shot again. If we're going to invest in vaccines, we need a technology that's broadly accepted by the American people. It can't just be like a minority of people want it. So instead, what we're doing is we're transitioning away from this platform of mRNA where there's been so much because of the pandemic and especially all the mandates and all, I mean, that, and the false representations that the vaccine can stop you from getting and spreading COVID, people have lost trust sort of legitimately. So we're transitioning away from that toward other technologies that are much more promising for instance, there's a project that I just heard about for maybe getting a flu shot that actually works once and you never have to take it again. If that actually works out, think about that. I guess a safe vaccine that doesn't, you never need the flu shot again. There's a whole bunch of like promising technologies we're going to invest in instead. So that's the main thing we're doing. We're transitioning away from this mRNA technology as a platform for vaccines toward other more promising technologies. At the same time, we're going to keep looking to see if it can be made better to work for cancer and other things. We're not getting rid of the technology altogether.
Doctor, Donald Trump's former Surgeon General Jerome Powell, this is what he said.
For folks who may not be familiar, though, Margaret, mRNA stands for messenger mRNA. It's a natural molecule that's in all of our bodies. These are advances that are not going to happen now. People are going to die because we're cutting short funding for this technology.
Doctor, I guess we don't have to go into the details of that, but it was so different back then during COVID than it is now. How much different is it inside the walls?
I mean, I wasn't inside back then, but I can tell you it's pretty exciting now. Dr. Adams, I think, can I just do a little minor petty thing? He's wrong that it's not actually messenger RNA, that the technology, the mRNA technology is called modified RNA. It's different than the RNA that's in our body. In fact, there was a whole Nobel Prize awarded for this, so I'm not sure why you got that wrong. It's also not true that people are going to die. I mean, I think the uptake of the COVID vaccine is so low compared to what it once was, and COVID itself has transformed into something for the vast majority of people much milder than it was, you know, say in 2020. I think he's living in 2020, seems to me. And inside the walls, I just sense hope and optimism. What I see is a lot of like optimism that new technologies are coming out, that we got rid of all the DEI grants, we got rid of all the sort of the politicization of this agency toward things that are actually might have a chance of advancing American health. I mean, if we just do our mission, right, our mission for the NIH is support research that improves the health and longevity of the American people. I mean, that's the spirit I'm approaching this job, and that's the spirit I think that most people here now are moving forward with.
Doctor, we saw, obviously, in recent years, so many of our institutions that the American people previously trusted, prove themselves to be untrustworthy, to put it as mildly as I possibly can. But we have to earn that trust back. I mean, look, putting Dr. J in charge helps, but it doesn't earn the trust all the way back. Now people sneer. They roll their eyes when they hear things like CDC, NIH. How do we get that trust back?
I mean, first, I think it's very important that we admit our errors, right? There, I mean, look, what happened during the pandemic was just a travesty, Jesse. And you covered it as well as anybody. I mean, you had me on the show when I was canceled, so that definitely helped me a lot. And I think that we have to just start there. We have to say, look, here were the mistakes we made, and here are the concrete steps we're taking to solve that problem, right? So I'll give you one example that I'm quite proud of that President Trump did. A couple of months ago, he signed an executive order saying that there was not going to be any more dangerous gain-of-function research funded by the U.S. government. You know, it's quite possible that some of this research that, unfortunately, that the NIH funded might have contributed to the causing the pandemic. Certainly, it was dangerous research. When President Trump signs that executive order, says, "Look, we're not going to do this kind of dangerous research. We're going to instead focus on research that might advance your health if we do it right." That's a concrete step. You can point to that and say, "Look, we've taken an action to protect the American public from dangerous things and move toward things that are really worthwhile." We have to do both. We have to take concrete actions to acknowledge and fix the things that came before that were problematic, and then actually have to produce. Like we have to solve all the Alzheimer's crisis. We have to solve the obesity crisis. We have to cure type 1 diabetes, type 2 diabetes. We have to there's a big advance, for instance, in sickle cell anemia. They're now a cure for it. Things like that, where we look and say, look, we actually are doing things that are useful for our health. We're not going to use our power to win some social justice war. We removed DEI from our portfolio because it wasn't advancing the health of anybody. I mean, it's just politicizing science. Things like that. It's going to take concrete action. It's going to take time, and most of all, it's going to take humility. I'm not here to lord over people. I mean, I view the work of scientists and of public health as servants of the people. That spirit is the key to making the American people trust us again.
It's nice that we have organizations that are no longer partisan, but doctor, when I hear you talk about tackling obesity, couldn't that be interpreted as really something that helps Democrats?
I think it would help everybody. I mean, it certainly could help me a little more if I could stand. I could stand to lose a few. I think you know, the key thing is scientific advances are inherently not political. They're inherently not political. If you have a scientific advance that gives you tools to make your life better, then it's not a Democratic thing or Republican thing, ideally, right? Ideally, the NIH should be seen as a resource for all Americans. I think if you look back the past few years, I think the way that the NIH got used, it was often a tool for the Democratic Party. They would call themselves the Party of Science and try to make some contrast with Republicans as if the Republicans weren't also the Party of Science. Science has no partisanship if it's ideally done. Ideally, science is the common heritage of all people, and if we do things right, we can get answers that help people solve their most thorny health problems. You put up the science. There's no such thing as the science. Science is a process for discovering how physical reality works, and our job is to translate that physical reality so that it addresses the most basic needs of everybody, not partisan.
Gosh, it's so refreshing to have you there. I'm so happy for you, Dr. J. We will break bread soon when I get back there. I appreciate you, sir.
There are no refs in this game. F*** the rules. We are going to win whatever it takes. We're going to take this to them in every way that we can. Next time we win power, we're going to drive that car like we stole it. We're going to legalize every dreamer's parents, every hardworking American doing backbreaking work that makes this country so great in the first place, even greater as U.S. citizens.
What is with the cussing? And I realize we beeped it all out there, but you can use your imagination on what he said. The cussing now from Democrats all the time. Joining me now, you know what, I'm asking Buck about that. Joining me now, host, of course, of the Clay and Buck Show. Everybody knows him, my friend Buck Sexton. Buck, There are a lot of theories that are getting tossed around. We'll get to the redistricting stuff in a minute, about the cussing Democrats do now. It's always F this and F that and F this and F that. Whereas, I mean, for most of our lives, buddy, we never heard either party say this. Why?
It's because people have started to do the math and look at the science, I think, Jesse, and understand that there's a clear correlation between low age-adjusted testosterone in Democrat men and being left-wing. So this is a compensation. It's absolutely true, by the way. If you are a low-T beta male, the chance that you are very left-wing in your politics is incredibly high. And I think that they believe that by cursing, it makes them look tough, makes them look like they've got... But really what it makes them look like is the kid who's got like the beginnings of a mustache in junior year of high school, who's like desperate to buy beer, who's like, yeah, like, look at my mustache. Like, you can trust me. You don't need my ID. That's the pathetic level that Democrats have sunk to here. And Beto O'Rourke, by the way, has this guy ever had a real job? I mean, I really asked that. He married a rich lady, by the way. I don't think he's ever had a real job. I promise you he's never been in any kind of actual fistfight or altercation. But he gets up there and does this fake tough guy wannabe Texan act, and it's sad. He's a little trust fund brat, or at least someone else's trust fund that he gets to attach himself to. And I hope he runs on the open borders message. I hope he runs on telling Americans, you know what we need? 10 million more dependents. 10 million more people scamming the system. Don't you love crowded ERs and schools where English as a second language is more popular than actually teaching English? Yeah, that's great. Run with that.
I'm actually glad you brought this up. I find this fascinating because there's always been an element of when you're running in a primary, Republican or Democrat, you're going to have to say some things or take some positions that may turn off kind of the normie morons who vote one way or the other. But there's that normal thing, and then there's what Democrats have now where you have to take the 20% side of every single 80-20 issue or you can't gain popularity in the party. But all the normies out there are never going to vote for that. And they all, Chuck Schumer's had to move way, way to the left. Not that he wasn't always a lefty, way to the left, just to avoid getting primaried by AOC. To be a Democrat today, you have to take insane positions. That means you can't get elected. How do they get out of that minefield?
I'm actually surprised that they haven't had that moment yet where they start to change course here, or start to maybe, you know, cut away the anchors that are pulling them down to the ocean floor, because that's exactly what's going on, especially with things like, okay, yeah, you can keep telling us that a 200-pound guy who now has grown his hair out long and painted his fingernails doesn't have an advantage over, you know, Susie, Sally, and Sarah in the high school lacrosse team, but we're sick of being lied to. Like, it doesn't matter how often you repeat this. We can all see that you're out of your minds, Democrats. And I think the issue is that they've used these so effectively as mobilization tools for so long. And they also, I think, got overconfident between COVID and the dominance they had with the social media platforms all colluding with them, where they thought they could ram delusion into our brains across the country. And now they're dealing with the backlash from that, which is, it turns out, half the country does not want to act like they're truly insane. Maybe a little more than half the country. And that's a problem for the Democrats. And I think it's probably more like a 70-70, or as you said, to 20%, so an 80-20 issue. I don't know how they walk away from this, though, because the activist class and the donor class for the Democrats are the craziest now. That's what people have to understand. The lifestyle issues that the billionaires like... you know, the Reid Hoffmans of the world are willing to fund have nothing to do with like the old Democrat Party of unions and, you know, blue collar labor or whatever. No, it's all race, communism, and gender insanity funded by billionaires who have never even gotten calluses on their hands from doing anything. I mean, this is the Democrat Party of today.
Yeah, I'm blown away at how they overcome that, because it's the donors, like you just pointed out. It's not just the rabid street animals with the purple hair on the streets that are gluing themselves to the highway. The people who fund the Democrat Party demand they take insane positions that can't make them win. I just saw a poll recently, I forget what it was, but they were talking about Democrat donors, And they essentially said, these Democrats, that our donors, the billionaires, want us to fight Trump harder. That was the position they take. The billionaire donors are not telling Democrats to slow down, Jasmine Crockett, take off your eyelashes. They're not saying these things. They're telling you, no, double down, triple down, so they're just screwed?
Well, the point of being a billionaire leftist is that you get to chinwag among your social set, which is going to be basically other, let's just be honest, tech billionaires or, you know, inherited money billionaires. You're going to be able to tell them about how virtuous you are and what a badass you are by writing these checks. I mean, you look at somebody like, try to get in the mindset of now Alex Soros. It was George Soros before, or George Schwartz, I believe, was his original name. He changed his name to Soros. Try to get in the mind of some of these individuals. Like, what does this guy Alex Soros think he's doing? He is funding things that make him feel important and brave, or at least important and tough, because he's a radical. There's nothing radical about this guy. He's been flying private his entire life. He's never done a hard day's work in his life. He's never had to worry about paying a bill in his life. But he wants to cosplay as some kind of revolutionary. And by writing checks to the street communists, as you point out, he's able to do that. And he's able to act like he somehow has worth beyond the dollars in the bank account that he didn't earn. Now you just extrapolate that out for the entire Democrat donor class and you see what their politics really are. It's a politics of showiness. It's a politics of self-importance dressed up as concern for other people. Because if you're concerned for other people, you certainly wouldn't be funding like Soros DAs who turn every city into a hellscape where everyone's being preyed upon by barbarians all the time. But that's what they do.
I almost forgot Soros and that beard he married, Uma, whatever her stupid name is. All right, Buck, are we gonna do okay in the midterms? I feel like with the redistricting stuff, which I know is not gonna go into effect by then, but with the deportations and I feel like we might do okay, but you and I've had this talk before.
Yeah, I know. I'm not, you know, Clay's the optimistic one. He's the happy one. I'm the bitter one. So, you know, I'm the one who's always like, I think we're screwed. You know, he loves sports. Clay is like the, you know, he's the golden retriever, and I'm a little more like the angry bloodhound who's, you know, in the backyard, doesn't want to be bothered. I would just say this. I would say, I think that we're going to keep the Senate, which is obviously very helpful, very good for judges and getting people through. Although that judicial machinery needs to work a lot more smoothly than it has been, I also think that we're going to be in pretty good shape to hold the House. Actually, and this is what I've been telling everybody. This stuff happens so quickly, as you know, Jesse. Trump has 18 months, and look, he's moving at an incredible pace. I have no complaints about the issues that they're focusing on, the speed with which they're focusing on it. I had tons of complaints in the first Trump administration, but they had a clown show making a lot of the decisions under Trump, so that wasn't really a surprise. It was just a lot of screw-ups. You had to fire a lot of people. This time around, though, they are locked in, but they only have 18 months, maybe less, to do big things, because then it just turns into a midterm fight. And the only thing Democrats will exist to do if they take the House is be as not just obstructive, because, you know, fine, both parties want to stop the other party, as insane as possible. Whatever a Democrat majority House can do to be as crazy as possible is what they will do. So I view it as really existential for the Trump agenda to maintain the House and the Senate. I think they can, though, I'd go as far as to say I think they will, Jesse. I actually think they will, which is unlikely in an off-year election. But look at how sunny my disposition is today. Shocking your viewers.
How about that?
Shocking.
How about that? How about that? Now I'm in a good mood. Thanks, Buck. Appreciate you, brother. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It is time to lighten the mood. And dogs are, they're something that gets featured regularly on the show for Lighten the Mood, because don't they make us all happy? It's not just yours. When you see a video of a dog doing something, loving on some sick kid, or saving somebody from a bear, puts a smile on your face.
Scout! come here. Scout. Oh my God.
I am glad the dog didn't catch the bear. I'll see you tomorrow.